Hi there, club members, and welcome to this week's Lunch and Learn. Our topic for today is a question that I've had come up a few times over the years, and it's a great one to tackle. How to become great at quoting fees to your patients. It can be a difficult process, and by the time you reach your 60s as a dentist, you've got it down pat, but in all the preceding decades, it can be quite a difficult hurdle to jump over to become very comfortable in presenting those fees to your patients. But first of all, let's have a look at a few reasons why you may become a little bit anxious, certainly a bit uncomfortable with discussing fees with your patients. Number one, the fear of rejection. We all have it. Fear of rejection comes to us very early in life, and we tend to tackle it throughout the rest of our lives. But the fear of rejection, that we're going to say that crown costs $1,600 and have that patient turn around and say, $1,600? Are you crazy? No way. We all get a little bit anxious around that element. So the fear of rejection is one of the reasons why we are uncomfortable with the process of discussing fees with our patients. The next reason why is a possible confrontation, or maybe the person's going to cry because they can't afford the treatment. Maybe they'll get angry. Maybe they'll be in stunned silence and you won't know what to say. So there's a possibility in the back of our minds that this person will respond to our fee discussion in such a way that makes us feel powerless to do anything about it. Another reason why we're uncomfortable about presenting fees to patients is that we load our stuff into the fee discussion. And so rather than just being able to say quite boldly, that crown is $1,600, or that part of the treatment plan is going to be $15,000, we find ourselves thinking and worrying, gosh, what if I was presented with a treatment plan that costs $15,000? I don't have $15,000, I'm just a new grad dentist. I don't have that kind of money. If I was in that person's position, they don't look like they can afford the $15,000. I'm going to make them feel so uncomfortable, and this is how I would feel about it. And all of that gets loaded into that fee discussion. So rather than boldly saying that phase of the treatment plan is going to cost $15,000, you instead say that part of the treatment plan, it's actually going to be $15,000. And just the way you present it, even if the patient for some reason appeared that they couldn't afford it, but actually do, they actually really do see the value, and they would have normally possibly said, oh, 15 grand, that's fantastic, it's that cheap, I can't believe it, yeah, I'll jump on board with that. Just because they have sensed unconsciously or subconsciously your loaded information around that fee discussion, they think, oh, I'm not quite sure if this guy truly believes that treatment's the value of it's actually $15,000. So they all of a sudden, you are creating or helping to contribute to the negative response of the patient because you've loaded your stuff into the discussion. Now, always keep in mind your position financially, or your value of oral health, or your perception of how much $10,000 is, or whatever the amount is, that is all unique to you. And everybody else has a different story. Everybody else attaches different meanings to that $10,000, to that treatment. And you can't read their minds. You'll always be wrong, especially with a patient whom you know hardly nothing about. All you know is their oral condition when they come in. Even if they come in on a regular basis and you've built up a relationship with them, you still don't know what all of their beliefs and values are when it comes to oral health, general health, and money. And so it is really important that you come in really clean. Shake off all the shackles you've got, the beliefs that you've got around money and how much people should be spending on their mouths, and just come in real clean. The intention to have in mind is put the same amount of emphasis, weight, meaning on the money discussion as you would about one of the clinical findings within their mouth. For example, you have a crack in that tooth. That will cost $1,600. For the patient, for them to be able to provide you with informed consent, they first need to be informed. They need to be informed about the crack, the need for the crown, the cost of the crown, how long it's going to take to get the crown, should they choose to get that done, how permanent that crown will be long term. So it is just another simple factor of information that you deliver to that patient so they can make their decision. And so do your best to take out all of the unhelpful meaning to things and just see that as, this is just another bit of evidence I need to put across to this patient. Simple as that. Another reason why we're uncomfortable around discussing fees with patients is that internal thing in the back of our brain of, are you worth $10,000? Who do you think you are charging $10,000 for your time and expertise? And so it is a worthwhile process to go down the path of making sure you don't have any evidence of any kind of imposter syndrome or anything like that. Any evidence of who do you think you are? And when we have those thoughts of who do you think you are, we are, that goes all the way back to when we were little children. And a guy named Dr. Bruce Lipton, he is an epigeneticist, and he is somebody that I would encourage you to jump on YouTube and start watching a bunch of his YouTube videos. He has a great breadth of knowledge around epigenetics, and one of the things that he has imparted, one bit of knowledge that I've really taken to heart and it's helped me enormously in so many ways, is that when we are little babies and little children up to the age of five, our brains are in Vata, and Vata is the same as hypnosis. And that is why while we're little children up to the age of five, we absorb so much information. Learning a second language is easy. And we also develop a lot of beliefs and things about ourselves during those first few years. And then after that, we become more conscious and the way our brain shifts and changes. And we then are left with our set of beliefs that we've established about ourselves from very little children. We drag them with us all the way through to adulthood. And as an adult, we can be much more discerning and we can identify with the evidence around us. I've studied, I've practiced dentistry for a certain period of time. I am worth this fee. But sometimes there is that dark hidden belief all the way back in the brain, the five-year-old brain, that said, I don't know if you are worth it. And so address this. And one of the ways you can address it is actually going into therapy, going into hypnosis and all the rest of it. However, it can also be done, because I'm proof in the pudding, it can be done in so many different elements of your world. You can go on a walk on a regular basis and repeat affirmations to ourselves. Now, this is more than just having an affirmation on a fridge or an affirmation in your diary that you read every now and again. You have to repeat, 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 repeat. That is another way that you can convince yourself of something different to what your subconscious believes about you. And my process was going on a walk every day. And my particular thing was around, I wanted to be more productive. And I've done it many times about many different things. I was also wanting to be a great performer. I also wanted to be this and I wanted to be that as well. But let's take it, for example, with this particular scenario. You want to know that you are worth 100 times what you fee. And so you go on a walk every day and you repeat to yourself over and over again. Your intention is to walk for about an hour. And you start repeating to yourself under your breath, I'm worth 10 times what I charge. I'm worth 10 times what I charge. I'm worth 100 times what I charge. I'm worth 100 times what I charge. You repeat it over and over and over again. And if you are like me, what you'll find is that after a series of minutes, your brain will start to think consciously about other bits and pieces, what's happening in the day, what I've got to do when I get home, what I've got to do when I get back to work. And the subconscious chatter, which you're not normally aware of, but is normally negative, you know, are you busy enough? Are you getting enough done? Are you good enough? That's now been replaced by the new tape that you're putting in your brain. I couldn't believe it when it happened. It happened after the first time I did it, that I was having all this normal, conscious, flowing thought. And in the background, I could still hear 100 times better than what you fee, 100 times better than what you fee, I'm 100 times better than what I fee. And because that was there, that tape, that new tape was playing, there wasn't any room for the bad one. So I decided to do that consistently every single day for 2 weeks. And I felt an absolute shift in my presence. When I was doing the productivity one, I just naturally became much more productive. When I felt overwhelmed at one point with the amount of work I had to get done, I said, I love the amount of work I've got to get done. I love the amount of work I've got to get done. I love the amount of work I've got to get done. And it too shifted the meaning I attached, the belief I had around that. And so if you have any issues, whether you're worth the money you're charging, and who do you think you are charging so much money, then I would encourage you to look up Dr. Bruce Lipton, look at a few of his videos, and maybe go on one of those focus affirmation walks, repeat the repetition of that new belief that you want to instill in your brain, the consistent repetition that will shift your awareness around it. It's a big hint for you because it works so well for me. I certainly hope it works well for you too. The other discomfort around discussing fees is because our indicator of success in that discussion is quite often, if the patient says yes, then I've achieved a good result. And I want you to shift the focus away from that completely and utterly. Your purpose in those discussions with patients does not need to be they must get to a yes. And it can negatively influence the way you're communicating if you are seen to have that as the main focus of your discussion with the patient. I want you to release your attachment to the yes completely, and I want to build your attachment into educating the patient, telling the patient all the things they need to know and understand in order to provide you with informed consent about their next step, to empower them to make a smart decision around their oral health that's going to suit them, because the only person that knows the best decision for them is them. And so release your attachment to the yes, bring your attachment back to when you walk out of that discussion, are you satisfied that you've educated that patient appropriately and effectively? And if you are, then I want you to pat yourself on the back. Great job. We achieved success with this one. And let it go. Now, sometimes some of the feedback that I have received from other dentists is because, especially if you're the owner of the practice, you feel like, well, I've got the power to discount this. I've got this patient in front of me. They're putting up a big objection to the cost. They want to get the treatment, but they just cannot afford it. And the inclination is to provide a discount. I could do it for you for 10% off. I could do it for you if you paid it off over a year. So the inclination is to discount. And I really want to get you comfortable with the idea of never going down the path of discounting. Just make a general rule of the practice. We don't discount. That's it. We just don't discount. In the early stages of your practice, I can absolutely understand the reason behind it. You just need to pay those bills. And if it's just going to be a 10% discount and you get that case, then go nuts and do it. With the building of a practice, you do what you need to do to remain viable and to be able to grow. But once you've established yourself, and if you feel like you are discounting and it's creating a rod for your own back, I really suggest that you make a firm and fast rule as of right now. That's it. No more discounting. That doesn't always have to be the answer. And to help you bring weight to that decision, let me go through a few of the things, the ramifications when you do start discounting. Number one, it does create the expectation of future discounting. And so if you've discounted once on that crown, then I'm going to have to discount the second crown I do a couple of years later because I did it for the first one. I now have to do it for the second one. What if they tell their friends and family members, come along to this dentist, they discount, and then they come in with the expectation of discounts. And when they don't get the discount, then they leave a bit dissatisfied. And so creating the expectation of future discounting will create a rod for your own back. Number two, demonstrates a lack of confidence. If you came along to me and to buy a beautiful car, like I've got this secondhand car, it's beautiful. I've kept it in such perfect condition. It's worth $12,000. And I'm charging you $12,000. That's the price tag on it. Oh, I can't really afford it. How about $9,000? Oh, okay, $9,000. Well, is it a great car or isn't it a great car? What you're telling me in the first instance, I believed you, but then you actually discounted it down. So has the value discounted as well? Is it actually worth $12,000? And so it just demonstrates a lack of confidence in your skills, in your product, in your service. When you see such room to bring the price down, it also complicates your business dealings. And so if you have discounted one patient's treatment and that discussion has been either overheard because it was conducted in the reception area, for example, and another patient overheard it, then it's going to complicate your business dealings with that patient, that patient that overheard it as well. But also, isn't that a moral dilemma for you, that you've got all of these patients coming through, and this past month, for example, you've had three of them get crowns done. And number one spent $1,600 on their crown. Number two patient spent $1,600 on their crown. But number three patient only paid $1,300 for their crown. How is that morally right to charge one less and the other two more? So I think it can complicate your business dealings and your sense of professionalism in that space with all of your patients. Another problem with discounting is it makes practice viability difficult. It absolutely does. It costs a certain amount of money to run your practice, and your accountant and you have likely done the sums. We need to achieve this much production to be able to have this side, this level of practice viability. And when you start to discount your services, you're starting to put that on unsteady ground. And so it is an ideal situation when you can just wipe out the discounting altogether, so you are not potentially making it difficult for your business to thrive. Another trouble with discounting is that it may make you resent the treatment that you're when you're actually performing it on that patient. And you would never become unprofessional or become rude with that patient, but again, there might be that little thought in the back of your mind, I'm doing this for 70% of what it's worth. And it makes you resent it a little bit. You want, ideally, to be doing all of your treatments to the very best of your ability, which of course you would, not cut any corners, not have to get discounted composites or use a discounted laboratory for the crown work. You want to be able to achieve a high level, consistently high level of service with all of your patients, because you don't have to cut any corners, because they're all paying the fee that you have deemed appropriate for your business, for your area, for your market, for your service. What discounting also does, it makes the decision all about price, and it's not always the case. If the price is the only part of the treatment presentation that the patient understands, because there was too much dental lingo, everything was over-explained and confusing to the patient, and so therefore the only information I've really got that's tangible that I understand as a patient is the price, then it will be all about the price. So let's take the price out of it completely and instead start to become more elegant in our discussions and education and informing of the patient about what's going on in their mouth. And I've got a little process to go through with that. But the last thing that the discounting does, it can confuse staff. And so they've heard you or seen you discounting that person and that person. And so they think when a patient does ring up and say, oh, can you do any better on the price? Yeah, I think we can. And then they give a discount, but the dentist is unhappy that they've given a discount. So it can be confusing to the staff. It's a much better system where everyone is very clear about what the fees of the practice are. And that's what they are, unless there are extraordinary circumstances. Everything must be flexible. But generally, all staff can rely on the fact that these are our fees and we do not discount. Now, the process that I mentioned before it's called the buying process. This was detailed in a book by Norbert Aubuchon called The Anatomy of Persuasion, Don't Let the Title Scare You. I read this book many years ago when I was a patient facilitator or patient coordinator. And one of my roles was discussing the treatments with patients and helping them, facilitating them through that decision-making process. And this buying process made so much sense to me that I converted it into the dental experience. And this is what it is. And follow me as we go. What Norbert Aubuchon stated was that in our process, in our brains that we move through whenever we're buying anything as a human being, it's a five-step process. Step number one, first we identify a need, that we have a need. That need could be rational or irrational. It could be I need a car to get around because I need to get to my job, or it could be I need to get another plant for my garden. I just don't have enough of within the hundreds of plants that I've already got. So it can be a rational need or an irrational need. But a need by itself isn't a buying process. The next step, the second step, is recognition, that we recognize this need is strong enough for us to take action. How often do we have in our lives wants and needs and desires? I want to have this, I need that, I want this, I need that. But we don't take action on all of those things because we haven't yet decided that that need is so compelling so strong that we want to take action on it. So recognition is the process of recognizing, yes, I will take action and go through the growing process because that's how I deem this need to be in my life. The third step of the buying process is search. Once we've identified that we want to do something about that need, we want to fulfill that need, we then go on a search. If it was buying a car, for example, that's when you would say, okay, I want to price in a car in this price range. I want it to have these capabilities. I want it to be a used car or a new car or a Nissan or a Toyota. And you'd go on a search. You'd gather all the evidence you need in order to make a decision around which car you're going to buy. The fourth step in the process is evaluation. That's when you evaluate all of the data that you've collected and you start matching what you searched, all of that data against your need and what you discovered within the search, which is going to best serve your need. And the final step is the decision. That's when you decide, this is the kind of car I'm going to buy. It's going to be red. It's going to be a Toyota. It's from that place in the corner. And it's going to be that one that I found on the internet, which was for $12,000. Or the decision could be, I don't have the $12,000 and I'm not willing to have a lesser than car. And so I'm just going to continue taking public transport. I'm not going to buy a car at the moment at all. So the decision might even be not to do anything about it. That's the buying process. Now have a look at this next slide as I take you through what that buying process looks like in the surgery, in the clinical surgery. And the reason why I found this so useful is because we are using a process that naturally occurs to the patient as we are talking to them about what services they need as a patient in order to get to better oral health. And so we are answering questions as they would naturally arise in a patient subconsciously. They wouldn't be quite aware of it. And we're going through a natural flow with them. And so they are more likely going to be on board and engaged with what we're saying to them. And by the time they get to the decision, they're ready to make a decision. Because what we can sometimes fall into the trap of doing is saying to a patient, you've got a cracked tooth, you need a crown. Or that wisdom tooth is impacted, it needs to come out. And the patient is missing a big chunk of information. And if they say yes, they're just going with faith and trust that you're telling them the right thing. But a bunch of people may not choose to go ahead with the treatment because they're like, I've got a crack, but I need a crown. There's something linking those two things that I don't understand. I think the dentist understands it, but I don't understand. And this solves that problem. So let's have a look. So the needs section of the buying process is when the patient is lying back in the chair and you're performing the clinical examination. And this is the time that you are identifying the needs that you see, because quite often patients don't see any needs in their mouth when they come in just for a general checkup. They haven't seen the crack, the perio pocket, the whatever. So your job is to identify to the patient the needs that you see. Don't provide solutions yet. Just identify the needs as you see them in that patient's mouth. You have a crack in this tooth. You have a perio pocket over here. You've got a buildup of tartar here. So we're just identifying needs. The next step is to have the patient recognize that the need that you've identified is worthy of them taking action over. And the way you do that is to communicate to the patient the other key part that a lot of us miss out on, and that is the ramifications if they did nothing. We too often go from needs to search, needs to the information, needs to the solution too quickly, and we miss this recognition part of the process, and it's such a crucial element of it. And so when you say, I can see a crack in your tooth, go to recognition. If that was left without any treatment, I fear that tooth will break. I would not like to see it break underneath the gum line, because then the ramification is we may lose the tooth and lose the chance to restore it in any other way. So needs with recognition, that is the clinical examination, identifying what you see needs the trouble areas and the ramifications if no action was done. I see there's a bit of tartar collecting behind your lower front teeth. That tartar is going to be making your gums inflamed. It may even be starting to have a detrimental effect on the bone underneath that gum area. When regular cleanings aren't done, they can have a damaging effect on the not just the gum, but the bone underneath the gum. In extreme circumstances, people's teeth start to get a bit mobile. And at the extreme end of that scenario, they actually start to lose teeth. Again, we're not providing solutions yet. We're just talking about ramifications. So the first element was identifying what you're seeing clinically. The second element is identifying for the patient what the ramifications are, because the patient is completely unaware of the ramifications. And that is an area that gets missed quite a bit. The next step is search. This is when you seat the patient up, because this is the active part of the process, the active part of the buying process for the patient, where they are in participation with you in gathering evidence, gathering data, gathering solutions to their problem. Because by this stage, we want them to be moving away from ramifications. And you can see my line under there that patients are either choosing towards outcomes. So I want whitening because I want beautiful shiny teeth. I want orthodontics because I want straight teeth. They're either moving towards outcomes or they're moving away from ramifications that they don't want to deal with. I don't want to lose my teeth. I don't want to lose that tooth because it's cracked underneath the gum line. I don't want to have mobile teeth because my bone support has moved because I never got a cleaning done. So they are either going to be choosing towards outcomes or away from ramifications. And so once you've seated them up and you're doing the search with them, that's when you're presenting these. And you remember here there was a cracked tooth. This is what you can do for the cracked tooth. And remember here we had the issue with the tartar. This is the kind of cleaning we can do. These are the solutions that you've got, all the choices that you've got in front of you to treat that particular issue. And more often than not, many choices of treatments will be confusing to the patient. So keep it simple. We've got the permanent solution, the temporary solution, or getting no treatment done at all. That's always a choice the patient has in front of them. So for the cracked tooth, we can, so for a badly broken down tooth, we can do the permanent solution, which is to crown the tooth. We can do the temporary solution, which is removing all the old filling and any crack lines we can see above the gum line, putting a large restoration in that tooth, but that will have a limited life. Or you can do nothing. Then we move into evaluation. This is where you manage all of the patient's feedback, their questions, and any barriers they've got to achieving that. One of the barriers could be, I simply can't afford it, but I want that ideal treatment. One of their questions could be, how long is that crown going to last if I do go ahead and get that more permanent solution done? And so you're with that patient during evaluation, so you're helping them assess all of the data you've given them so they can assess which one is going to best suit their needs. And then the final step, which is the decision, and depending on how complex the treatment plan is, if it's quite simple, you need a crown or you need to have a filling done, then you could say, what would you like to do with that tooth? Did you want to get the filling done or the crown, or would you like to leave things? And so you ask the patient what their decision is. If it's something more complex, more detailed, then they might want to go home and decide at home whatever is good for them, because you've achieved your goal, your agenda, which is to educate the patient, provide them enough information that they can make a decision for themselves. So this process will help you enormously because it takes the money element out of it, because the money element is part of the search, is part of the information you deliver to the patient in order for them to make a decision about their own mouth. And you are presenting it, remember, just like you're presenting, there's a crown, there's a filling, it's $600, it's $400, it's $10,000. So you're just presenting it as another piece of data. That's it. As simple as that. So I like this process because it helps the patient understand the value of the treatments that you are suggesting to them. And so when you're detailing the fees around these services, that they've actually already seen the value because they're moving away from the ramification. So the value for the patient is the moving away from the ramification or achieving a healthier mouth. And now they, because that step has been so well done, now they can make that value judgment, which is less about money and more around the value of the service, because they've got all the information now. We haven't just gone from you've got a crack in your tooth, to you need a crown. So you've got a crack in your tooth, it may crack underneath the gum line, and we end up losing the tooth. And then you've got the other teeth that kind of collapse into the space and creates other dramas of their own. They understand that. And so they're not just saying, how much does it cost? Because that might be my decider. they're saying, I know I don't want that happening in my mouth. I don't want to live through that ramification. And so now I will see a greater level of value and it will be less about the price. So let's finalize this and go through managing a few of the objections around fees. Under normal circumstances, we shouldn't use the word but because it negates everything prior to it. For example, you know, I really love the way you work, but I don't like this element of it. It negates everything prior to, but it works well in the dental setting. So when a patient says, but that's so expensive. Yes, it's expensive, but it is the best way to save your tooth. Yes, a root canal filling and then a crown is expensive, but it's the only way to save your tooth. And moving back to what I was mentioning before about sometimes you fall into the trap of saying you've got a crack, therefore you need a crown. Yeah, as we've just identified, it's only the patient that can identify a need that's worthy of their action. And so what you could do then is go straight to the ramifications. So it's not that you need to have a crown, that it's if you want to save your tooth, you need to crown it. Another way of managing the objections to the fees, because they may absolutely want that treatment, but literally, I mean, no one has the money tree in their backyard. Patients don't have it either. And so the finances may be that big hurdle. So make sure you do have a series of payment plans available. There are so many available now. You can have an in-house one for smaller, more short-term amounts. You can have easy pay. So if it's one crown or one extraction, and then they can pay that over, I think it's four payments every fortnight. And you can have ones for the larger treatment plans, the $10,000, $12,000 treatment plans. And so when they say, I really want to get that crown done, I just don't have the money. We have payment options. Let me show you. And you've got the printout there, the brochure that you can send them home with. This is the way that we can help make sure that you can afford this treatment. And so that addresses the objection when it is actually all about the money. The third is actually offer them the alternative temporary fix. So doing nothing is not acceptable to you. Doing the big thing, we simply have got zero money, can't do it. Let's get the temporary thing done and plan for the crown in the future. When you come in for your recall every 6 months, I'm going to keep a really close eye on that tooth. And if I start seeing it break down even further, we can then plan to get the crown done. In the meantime, start putting a bit of money aside every week from your pay and we can plan for that in the future. As with anything, the best way to get really confident in doing anything, to get confident in talking and discussing fees with your patients, practice. It's the practice that builds competence, and it's the competence that makes you feel confident in doing it. And so absolutely, please be open to doing role plays. Role play it out. Get feedback from other team members about what you're doing great and what could be improved upon. You play the role of the patient and have the fee discussion and know what it feels like to have that discussion. Identify within yourself. I think that sounded really good, and I think that sounded like I was devaluing the treatment itself. So role playing can be enormously effective. And just do it. This is why the 6-year-old dentist is so confident doing it, because they've done it so often over the years. So just jump in and start doing it. You're not going to do things perfectly at the start. After every fee discussion, think to yourself, was I happy with that? Was there a better way I could have done that? So don't just be happy with the thought of, I could have done it better, full stop. No, I could have done it better. How? Play it out in your brain. Okay, next time I'm going to do it more like I've played it out in my brain, rather than just repeat the same thing over and over again, expecting a stronger result. And so role play and just do it. That they are my pieces of advice when it comes to becoming great at discussing fees with your patients. I hope this has been helpful. If you have any questions, as always, contact me anytime. I wish you the very best with it, and it is certainly an area that you're going to be consistently improving in all the time, because we quote fees to patients all the time. Have a fantastic week, and I look forward to seeing you next time. See you later.